to the FTN Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Insert witty opener here.
Dude, always amazing. We have a jam-packed episode today. On this episode, we're going to talk to Paul McKelvey and Joshua Diffie from their respective things. I mentioned this on their segment, but two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah, they're like the strawberries and cream of 40K and tournament organization.
We're going to go with that, but we're going to let them talk about it on their spot. Then we'll come back. We're actually going to talk about orcs. We're going to talk about Harlequins. We're going to do... I have a kind of an expose on 40K today that I do with John Damaris.
You know, how good's John?
Yeah, we had their segment. We debuted it, at least on our feed, on last week's episode. We're going to talk to John on this episode, and then you and I are going to come back and talk about some hobby stuff. So it's going to be a great show.
It's going to be outrageous. But yeah, this was seems like a big one. There is a lot going on.
It's going to be cool. Hold tight. It's going to be a great show. But look, as everyone knows, if you've been following me on Twitter and Instagram and listening to the last show, I've been building Mega Knobs. And that's kind of the thing is, like, what is the best combination for Mega Knobs? And I think between us talking about it and listening and watching other people's success, I believe that the best combo for Mega Knobs is 6 Mega Knobs with Kill Saws and 4 with Power Claws and Rockets.
What has informed that decision? Like, what are you backing that choice up with here?
I think Kill Saws get a lot of attacks and they do a lot of damage, and that Rockets are the middle of the road point cost. So the Flamers are, I think, 17 points apiece or something like that. The Rockets are 12 points apiece, and the Shootas are something like 7 points apiece. So Rockets are firmly right there in the middle, and they have a high upswing. The upside to their damage is pretty astounding.
So just backtracking for a second. The Rock Saws, what's the profile there? It's strength times 2 minus 4 flat 2 damage, is that correct?
For the Kill Saws?
Yeah, for the Kill Saws. Yes. I said Rock Saws.
Yep.
Same
thing. Yeah, you think of Gene Steelers for a second, but yes, I feel you. I feel you.
I feel like it's a very similar proposition between the two of them. Well, it's a similar. It's the same profile, isn't it? Strength times 2 minus 4, 2, that's like 2 damage for Rock Saws and for Kill Saws.
The Kill Saws have a damage 2. The Power Claws, which, I mean, 4 of them in the unit have Power Claws, are D3 damage. So you've got the Kill Saws are also neg 4 AP. So the Power Claws is neg 3 AP. You don't need the neg 4 often, but when attacking with this weapon, you must subtract 1 from the hit roll. No problems. I mean, that's anytime you have times 2 strength, you're looking at that. If a model is equipped with 2 Kill Saws, add 1 to its attack characteristic. So you're adding, they've already got 3 attacks apiece. You go up to 4 attacks on a weapon skill 3+. You got a banner, you're close by, you're getting 2+. You know, it just seems like you're getting a lot of upside from Kill Saws. And that's why I think more of them is better than a bunch of Power Claws and Shootas.
Well, exactly right. How much more value are you going to get? So how much value does a Shooter on a Mega Knob actually add? It doesn't really add that much.
With BS5, you're getting much more now look.
Yeah, exactly.
The orcs, they benefit from, most of the time you see a BS5, like with the orcs, they get 3 times as many shots. So it's like every single shot is going to hit. So you're only paying the points for 1 hit out of that. So I think it is a little advantageous to not necessarily factor into the BS5 because you get so many extra shots. The Shooter is assault 2, but I think in this situation, the Kill Saws with the neg 4 AP, with the flat damage 2, you want more of them than you want anything else.
Absolutely agree. And it's a melee unit. Their Mega Knobs are a melee powerhouse unit. Don't try and trick them out with shooting weapons. I feel like that's just... there are better options for that. You got tank busters, you got looters, you got shock attack guns, you got even just Shooters on boys is a better investment than I think paying extra points to trick out a Mega Knob when you can just make it punch better.
Well, with a Mega Knob, if you go with the Power Claw and a rocket launcher, you're looking at 45 points. That means every Mega Knob that you have is equivalent of like 5 boys you don't have to paint.
That's actually a really good way of looking at it, to be honest. Actually, yeah, that's very true. That's very, very true. Yeah, that is the, you pay the boys tax when you want to play orcs. Do you have 100 of them? Maybe double that. Okay, you have a well-rounded orc army now.
Yeah, no, you need a lot of boys. I mean, and that's cool. Like, it's actually like one of the neat themey things about it. But you know, with like that's that hobby wall. Like, what am I hitting it with these boys? And I did. I hit it like with the boys. And I had to, like, last year, 2 years ago, I had to make the call. Like, do I push forward with a bunch of orc boys, or do I start painting space marines? Like, what's the deal here?
Mm. Yeah, it's a big commitment one way or another. And it's just an orc army just lives and dies by your ability to paint green. Even Meganobs. Like, well, so you look at a Meganob, yeah, and the focal point still is that green face on the Meganob model.
Yeah, it is. We'll talk about that in the finishing move segment about how I've overcome that hurdle. But yeah.
I just haven't painted them green. Everything is he's only painted the metallics. Everything else is sprue gray. That's how he's overcome it.
You could, like, contrast paint and washes. Yeah. Okay, that's the secret. That's the secret of every finishing moves. That's not true. But so you have to hold tight for that. But no, I've actually not stuck on the head of the Meganob torso, and I've used sprue to super glue the head onto the sprue so I can paint it separately than the mm-hmm. body. And believe it or not, there are actually not a ton of good Meganob tutorials out there. So I've able to distill the Meganob painting tutorials into something that I think is going to be interesting at the last part of our show.
Good idea. I think that's a great idea, to be honest. Like,
we'll see.
And especially with how deep set those Meganob heads are, well, especially on the new kit as well. In the old kit, I think they're quite a bit easier to get to. But who likes painting like that much metal or resin anyway?
Well, the new kit has a really cool kit. Like, I mean, I don't remember exactly when it came out, like 2015, so like 5 years ago, or whatever. And it's fairly modern, and it's all plastic, which is great. And then it's got that big like armor around the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I've left the heads off. There is some orc skin that's visible on the model, even with the head off.
Yep.
But I think if you get, like, what is, like, our boy Peachy from GWSA, phases and bases. Like, if you get the face right, you get the base right, you've got an amazing looking model. But so we're going to put a lot of effort into the rest of the model itself, but I left the heads off. And so to get that real definition in the skin tone and the variation in the face, because some of them have some mechanized parts, I think it's going to look good.
I think so too. I think you've made some wise choices there.
We shall see.
I was quite interested with the Meganob kit when the new one went to the old one. So have you got a new and an old Meganob?
I don't. The old Meganob is metal.
Yeah, I was about to say, because there doesn't seem a huge amount of variance in the actual sculpt, does there?
Oh, well,
like, I mean, I think they're like 10 to 15% bigger.
Profile, you're exactly right. They're a little bit bigger. But the benefit of this kit, or the plastic kit, is that the arms, they terminate in nubs. So they have these tab A and a slot A kind of thing. That's the way that they work. So you don't actually have to magnetize this kit. You can functionally build them to have a lot of options in the plastic kit. Like, I've inserted zero magnets into this, and I can freely transition between kill saws and power claws and combi weapons at my leisure. Now, the only thing I have to commit to, like officially commit to, is the type of combi weapon that I build. That's it. Everything else is pretty much modular.
Mm.
It's amazing.
I like it.
That's one of my definitions of like what's a good kit and what's not, is how many magnets do I have to labor into, you know, into creating. And you don't with this kit.
Mm. I do like how more intuitive GW is making a lot of their kits, especially when it comes to magnetization. So I know the best example of that is the Titanicus models, which actually apparently have, I don't know this definitively, they actually have slots where you can put magnets in your Warlord Titan.
100% true. As I said, not only do they have magnet slots, they tell you that this is the magnet type you should use for this. Like, it's amazing. And I will say, actually, within the scope of you just saying that, I drilled out a barrel hole in my
Combi
rocket. Like, we're leveling up hobby-wise within the scope of this show.
That's how we roll.
Look, experiment on orcs, because you can't go wrong. Because you could always just put a little bit of rust or, a hazard stripe or a
check. Just like, oh, he's just He's just supposed to have three arms. What? You didn't think orc? You don't think some orc got like the fungus gene with the third arm? Like, what are you talking about? Of course
that's
it does.
It.
It's three arm Bob. Leave him alone.
My only complaint to the Meganobs is they only come three to a kit.
And I don't know how much they cost over there, but over here, I think it's over $100 for those three.
Oh wow!
Rough. It's rough. Let me just double check that. Sam, I'm not lying. Meganobs, James Workshop.
So point.
But
wise,
yeah, we do we cop the rough end of $98 dues, Australian dollar dues to be precise.
Yeah, it's three to a kit, but you do get a lot of value in that because I think that if you don't glue the arms on, and you don't have to. I mean, that's the greatest thing. You don't have to. You get some flexibility. Now you do have to kind of commit to the combi weapon if you do, but you can almost freely transition between the kill saws and power claw versus combi weapon. You know, and I went with the rockets because look. If you're rolling sixes, fives, and sixes, you're really going to wish you hit with the rockets anyway.
Yeah.
And this is actually, I labored over. This is the kind of stuff I labor over, is that do I want the flamer on the knobs? And orcs already kill horde stuff really easily. I should say really easily. It's like you have all the tools you need to kill hordes.
All the anti-horde you'll ever need is right at your fingertips. In any basic army you make, you're already going to be building in most of the anti-infantry and anti-horde you'll probably ever need.
You've got X amount of attacks or you've got, you know, X amount of shots or whatever. It just all adds up to you can take on hordes pretty effectively.
Exactly. I've never found an orc army to be like, wow, I wish I could just stomp these termagants harder. Gosh, it's just not a thing for them.
Yeah. So I went with the rockets. I mean, basically, they are middle of the roads point-wise. But I think that the orcs just no matter how you spec them, they're always going to be good at killing anything T3 or below.
Yeah, I just don't see them struggling. No matter what build you decide to go on or what path you choose to take, I feel like unless you just take things like I'm going to take these three units of tank busters, three death dreads, and some other silly choice. Unless you're just building something really obscure. If you're just taking boys, like three units of 30 orc boys is most of the anti-infantry you're probably ever going to need.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. You know, so that's the way I went as well. Like kill saws, there's so many ways to buff the knobs with either rerolls or plus ones or whatever.
Yeah, and plus attacks and plus the hit, and there's just layers and layers and layers for orcs, which I like. I think it's very good.
Yeah, I think it's a good kit. I've enjoyed putting them together, actually. Anytime you kind of discover the fact that you don't need to magnet, because magnetization, it's its own hassle.
Yeah, here's a funny question for you. When can you pinpoint the spot where G-Dub's sculpts went from this kind of wonky positioning, like as they were with some of the old metal and resin kits, when you're building them, you're like, this shouldn't work. There should be an easier way to do this, to really intuitive and this kind of these amazing kits that we have now. Because you crack open, I don't know how people feel about their kits, but I've got some old fantasy models here, some old Ogre Kingdoms fantasy models. I crack open that kit, and there's like, here's one side of the whole frame, and it's just got arms on it. And it's just like, it's a huge frame with just a couple of arms on it. And then you have ridiculous stuff like what I remember as the first one where I noticed this was the Tempest of Sion kit. And you crack that open, and it's like literally the entire frame is pieces of models.
Yeah,
it's just back to wall nonstop everything.
There's actually like a leap of consciousness between fourth and fifth edition.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's where the point of difference occurred.
Like if you look at the Sanguinary Guard sprue, which is amazing, but there's still all this open space on it. Like same with the fourth edition, fifth edition type, like Tac Marine sprue. Like when you leap to that, like when you realize they can, when you finally realize. Or when they realize they can drag and drop sculpts into a sprue
with
a CAD or whatever. Like, yeah, it's amazing times. And that's where these Meganobs is that there's the kits have no free space on them. Like there's parts everywhere. There's parts that you're never going to use. Like me, I'm an economist when it comes to painting. It's like, I'm not going to put this bit on this model because that means I have to paint it.
I only reserve that for my grandest of models. Like I remember I was painting, I've got over 200 painted Cadian infantry, and I have some of the Enviro Hazard Cadians the Forgewood upgrade kits, and I have some veteran head or the Forgewood upgraded guys, and those guys get everything. Those guys get bayonets on their las guns, they get grenades, they get water canisters, they get all sorts of crazy stuff on them. But every other dude, literally, here is your paper mache armor and your flashlight. Go off, son. Fight for the emperor.
that's very fair. Look, I'm not getting rid of any single one of these sprues. Like I'm carefully preserving all of the various bits that are on this thing. But like everything that you add on is something else you got to paint, kind of thing. But this orc Meganob sprue has all the goods on it.
Yeah, I suppose there was a. Like, so there's not that many kits at the moment where you'd have to buy many of the same kit in order to build a unit of your choosing. I know one of them, I said the Scion kit before. So where the Scion kit's a little bit different is it's got one of each special weapon, and that being from Flamer to Plasma Gun. So they got Melters and...
Yep. Well, the Sergeant has like five or six different...
Exactly. I was about to say, you can build of the four guys in the five guys in that box, you can build each one of them in a myriad of different ways. But if you wanted to build a unit that has four plasma guns in it, you're going to need four boxes of five guys. But then at the same time, you could build a unit of 10 guys with four plasma guns and then a unit of 10 guys with four hotshot volley guns. Out of those, you know, you've got enough hotshot volley guns to do whichever one you want. So the next guys are covered. Yeah, that's something I actually like. I like more options rather than specialized stuff. But I do kind of miss the old days of the bits.com where you just, and GW would sell bits and you just log on and be like, need this conversion, GW send me the bits and you're good to go. I do miss those days a bit.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that we're in kind of a, it's not the renaissance, but it's just an awakened period of neat plastic bits. And that's what, I mean, as someone who didn't build a bunch of Meganobs before this, this time period. Like it is good. Like, and when you discover, like, oh crap, I don't have to do this. I don't have to struggle with this. Like, this is something that's like you can't even tell that I didn't put glue on this power claw. Like, it just slots on there, and you would never
slots on.
You would ever know.
That's that is really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, I think this is for an orc general. Like this, it's nice that you have that option because this is one of the armies that, like, once you paint 200 orcs, you don't necessarily want to revisit that over and over again. I don't think, but you know, we'll see. I've enjoyed this. I've enjoyed this process.
Yeah, I'm not painting any more Cadians. it's like you get a guy. You know, when you get like when you're younger and you get really smashed on tequila. Like, yes. I don't know why, but for me, it's tequila. And then when you're like hungover as all hell the next morning and someone mentions like drinking tequila, you're just like, oh, you regress and you're a turtle back in your shell. And like, I don't want to live in a world with tequila in it anymore. It just brings pain. But yeah, that's how I feel about when someone's like, oh, do you feel like you need any more Cadians? Like, no.
I do not.
I expect Orcs Boys is a similar one.
Yeah, I think once you hit the 120 Orc Boys, that you're like, you know what? Everything is just like vanity preference at this point. I don't ever want to need anymore.
Exactly.
I just want to want.
And how funny is it? They remember the last edition, the green horde, the green tide, whatever it was, the formation for orcs, where you had 100 orc boys, all mobbed up into one unit. That used to be a big army.
No, that used to be like strong army.
It was a very strong army as well. People used to be like, oh.
The orc boys figures that I have is off of that concept.
I mean, it set people up for 8th edition so well. Yeah. because that's literally a battalion now. You got your three units of 30 orc boys. There's your what was the green tide. That's your 10 boys shy of the green tide of yesteryear. Is there something to – maybe that's a discussion point for another day, but is there something to G-Dub making armies bigger? I mean, certainly armies are undeniably more well-rounded. Like, they actually look like armies again. It's not just, here's your five Riptides and the support stuff for your five Riptides. Here's your 10 Paladins of 5th edition. That is your entire army. 10 Paladins, Drago. Sick, you're done.
No, I mean, there's something about – look, if you can make an army and lock in, like, okay, like Necrons – my 50 Necron warriors, my 100 or 120 Orc boys, my 120, 200 Hormigants or whatever. Like that's strong. If you can always build around that, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I suppose that's another topic as well. When you start an army, like what's the core units you want to build a collection around? Like, look at the things that are always going to be wanting to take a battalion of Orc Boys. EG, you should have Orc Boys.
Yeah, I think it's easier to do that with certain armies than others. But to, I don't know if we're going to solve that. Let's take a break. Let's come back with Diffie and McKelvey and myself. And then after that, you and I will jump back in. We'll talk about some cool stuff with Harlequins. And then we'll do another special segment.
Sweet.
See you all in a minute.
See you then.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a community spotlight segment on Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this time by Paul McKelvey.
Howdy.
And Josh Diffie.
G'day.
Two great tastes that taste great together. If people aren't aware of you, I've got the respective brains behind Best Coast Pairing and the Down Under Pairings.
That's correct.
Yeah, I don't know about respective minds, but we'll go with it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Definitely familiar with both you guys. You guys have been on the show in the past, but never together. So I thought it'd be cool to get y'all on since we just heard on 40K Today and maybe some other properties about the joining forces between the two pairing systems. So tell me, what does that mean? What can we expect? How does this benefit the users? Because I see this as just overwhelmingly positive, and I wanted like to hear it from you guys.
Basically, it came down to we just got a chance to have a conversation with each other and realized that there was odds and ends that we could do on either side to make, instead of working against each other, work together and make a tool that is not only the best tool for 40K, but for everyone in the gaming community, and just keep cranking out really cool, neat features that are unique and make the experience better for everybody and easier and more in depth. And it's a lot of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, it was an interesting call when it all came about, because we being Adam, who's on this show quite often, that so your listeners are well familiar with Mr. Camilleri. Adam and I reached out just to see if we could do some kind of sharing of data, because we were doing a whole bunch of stats, and it kind of just evolved into a different conversation, because we realized we are very like-minded teams.
Yeah.
Which is no real surprise. We were both building pairing software separately.
Well, and no surprise. I mean, building pairing software separately for the same cause. I mean, we're both. The biggest thing that came across from the initial phone call was that everyone on the teams was very committed to the communities and making sure the communities grew and prospered because of whatever came of this. So that was. I think they were. We're in the same similar mindset in that aspect too. Is that we love the tournament scene. We love playing 40K and just want to make it better.
That's what it seemed like to me. So I guess, I mean, they're great things about the individual pairing systems as it stands right now. And so are there short-term plans to incorporate some of the things that are different about each other into either both things or whatever? Like, how will this, how will we see the effects in the short term? And then past that, what are the long-term plans?
Josh has been working really hard to build out a lot of the functionality that we already had, and also bring over a lot of the functionality that DUP has already had into BCP. I think that when we go live with this, which is going to be, I don't know, Josh, a couple days. I mean, you have a better idea on time frame. But when we go live, I think people are going to be shocked to see how much he's cranked out in, I think, a relatively short amount of time, and where it's going to lead into. I mean, you're going to be able to kind of see where this is headed, and it's going to be pretty cool. I mean, stats for just about everything, and web portal for all the things we do, and it's really exciting. As far as I wish I could just do a share screen right now. I know it's kind of silly from a podcast, but show what we've been working on. And I don't mean to steal Josh's thunder. I'll let him take away and kind of tell you a little more about what in particular he's been working on.
Well, maybe we can put a couple of screen grabs in the show notes if you have them. If it's ready for prime time,
I think it is.
Happy to. Yeah.
We can
shoot through some screenshots. So basically, the short term plans were kind of evolving rapidly with the whole COVID-19, because we changed gears quite a bit when events started to drop off a little bit, and trying to pump out features that were more user focused than player focused, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So people who want to digest information about their local meta, their game systems, and those sorts of things, versus features that players themselves would gain a benefit from. That's not to say that we're not looking at more features for players. It was just the order change because of the nature of the situation. Yeah. So I was on your lovely show a few months back where we were talking about stats on Down Under pairings. So Down Under pairings has been quite popular in the Australia and New Zealand space for quite some time, but it's never had the same following that Best Coast Pairings has had in the US and elsewhere, but the amount of games played in the US is just ridiculous. And so bringing over some of the stats ideas, but just on such a larger scale, has had me really excited. I am a nerd in a data warehouse. and yeah, so we've got, I think at last count for the calendar year, so Jan 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2020. I think we're clocking 85,000 odd games of Warhammer 40K, so that doesn't include the latest LVO. It's just doing it on a calendar year right now, but it will expand it out shortly. So that's like, that is a family-friendly, expletive amount of games.
That you've now sourced from what was already been played into grinding up some stats.
Yeah. So do you want some little snapshots? I'm trying to remember what I did as snapshots on 40K today and give you something different. I won't bore you with the obvious one, or maybe I will. We all know Adeptus Astartes was the biggest faction. That's no shock horror to anyone there. But it is covering 12.26% of the meta. So that's, if you think about how many factions there are out there, over 1 in 10 players are playing Marines. The shock one that I always find is the fifth highest, which is Orcs. I knew Orcs were popular for a very brief period of time, but I didn't know they were going to be as popular for the whole season.
Interesting.
So that's quite an interesting little little tidbit there.
I guess people already had their 90 to 120 boys painted and they were
ready to go.
Sure, they were going to use them. They were dedicated.
Well, yep. The cool thing is that, you know, you're saying that, and then Josh has actually taken it, and when you click on the individual faction, it breaks it down into, you can see how they've changed by date. So like when the Codex dropped and when other Codexes dropped, what their win percentage was as the dates flew by.
Is this going to be and also, in the app? Sorry, Jim. Will this be available like to click in through the app, or is this just web-based at the moment?
At the moment, we're going to have it. I mean, it's just like everything else we've had to do. We have to build it in stages as we can bring things out. So the stats feature will be on the web at first, and then very shortly we'll have it into the apps also.
That's amazing.
But anyone who has a web log or has a login for the app will be able to get access to the web login when it's available.
And interestingly enough, to push this out as quickly as we could, because I think Paul's probably had to rein back some of my excitement. To push this out as quickly as we could, we've actually made a relatively interesting decision. You can't create a user today in the new web login. You have to be a user through one of the apps. There's some technical reason behind that, and that'll go away very shortly. But it's just we wanted to get it out now, because there's a lot of people at home right now not getting to play 40K and thinking about the good old days when Orcs took up the fifth highest mantle of the meta.
The good old days, like it was just 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Orcs are coming back, man. In my hand right now, I have a Mega Knob that I've been building. Gonna get up to the fourth highest.
That is the best expression or best statement to make to someone who doesn't know anything about 40K. Just think that back through your head, what you just said. It's hilarious. You have what in your hand?
You heard me right. I didn't stutter.
Awesome.
You mentioned some people will be able to log in, get their login through the apps. Some of the stats will be up on the webpage. It will be incorporated itself into the apps. And do you in the stats we're talking about, if people have not gone and checked it out over the course of us talking about things like, in, you know, 40K Stat Center guys, what they do and what's been in Down Under pairings before. I mean, people, I think, have, at least over here in the U.S., have embraced Best Coast pairings. I mean, it's Paul, if you don't mind me saying, I think it was a great invention to allow people to be almost unencumbered by some of the tedium of running a tournament, which in itself has also kind of helped promote more tournaments being run.
I mean, that was our goal from the get-go, was to make sure that, I mean, I just to recap on it, is that the whole reason why BCP was started was because I'd never run a tournament before and kind of mentioned to Garrett in passing, hey, I don't know how to run a tournament. He's like, I'll build an app for that. And here we are 5 years later. But it's it has taken people who had no idea what they were doing. I mean, because before, you know, it was trying to source a program and either use a spreadsheet or make something up on your own. I mean, it's brought, it has made a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't have run events, given them the ability to run events and larger events on top of that.
Yeah, we have to deal with paper, you know, keeping track of papers, keeping track of an Excel spreadsheet, something that does table pairings. I mean, like, these are all, I mean, they may be small barriers, but they are barriers. And when you remove many of those, and especially in a big chunk like BCP and the other apps had done it, I think it does. It just kind of empowers the community.
It's, I mean, the most telling thing is it's just watching the amount of users grow. That's the thing that's always stood out to me is and give me the warm and fuzzies at the end of the day is just seeing how many people download it, how many events are created. I mean, before the COVID hit, I mean, we'd broken 300 events a weekend. So, I mean, that's huge from I remember Casey posting when we were doing our first event at Broadside Bash way back, you know, 4 years ago. He's all, let's get ready for it. You know, here it comes. But it was just, you know, the weekend after that, we had four events, you know, after one event. And then just it's snowballed from there. I mean, I had 300 events. I mean, Josh and I were just talking about yesterday is that web traffic, we're still seeing really good web traffic. But we're getting to the point of, you know, numbers of, I don't want to say the exact numbers, but there's a lot more people that watch the community than I think we understand. You know, even though we might all see. Right. Yeah, you know, it might see 15,000 people participate in the ITC, but it's at least three times that pay attention to it. So it's that's how we get to 300 events. You know, it's and that's if COVID hadn't happened, that I have no doubt that number would have only continued to grow as you know things as things kept growing. I mean, it's been basically 15% month over month is how much more it's grown. So and it's. So I get really excited when I think about, you know, it's almost like looking for the silver lining, right? COVID gave us this chance to bring the DUP guys on and figure out what we were going to do with the systems. And then we were at Casey and I were actually at Gamma the week that, you know, stuff hit the fan, so to speak. And Josh had cranked out a ton of stuff already in one direction, working on building events and things like that. So we could show it at Gamma. For those who don't know, I should probably back up. Gamma is like, it's the trade show for the game industry. And so we had, we were showing off what we had and stuff like that. And then being able to show off what we were had coming with the web and then suddenly hard pivot to like, no, okay. So the stuff that we wanted to do, we're going to do that now. But that's why I get kind of excited when I start talking about it. And I know Josh is excited because it's things that we've wanted to do as the BCP team for a long time and just haven't had the bandwidth to do. And being able to bring Josh and Adam over, it's, we have so much more manpower to do the things that we wanted to do and see the things created that we wanted to have created. And it's the community, when they get their hands on this, is going to go bananas.
I think you're right. Yeah. This is going to give a lot more tangible things for people to sink their teeth into and to kind of live this in between the events. I mean, if it's the week or in between a Codex release or when they're trying to plan out their next army, there's all kind of things that this factors into that fantasy. And you guys were coming at it. I mean, granted, yes, with the some similarities of this is a system in which you can organize and produce a tournament, you know, whether that be a 10-person tournament or a 1,000-man tournament. You know, there was a way to do that. But now you have some of that meat, some of that that personality from how you were going about attacking it coming together into something that I think people are going to really like. And that's why I was so excited about getting you guys on to talk about it.
Well, and I'm really excited to see the first person to get shut down when a new codex comes out or someone says something's OP and be like, let's actually look at the numbers on that. Like, this is actually what's going on, not what you feel like is going on. So it's going to be cool to see how conversations evolve based on the game, based on what data can actually be displayed now, not just the feel badsies.
Yeah. The real information. I mean, I mean, you're at the point, yeah. I don't know if it's like critical mass of things becoming past anecdotal, but you know, I think this is going to be interesting to see You know, because they'll be tracking players, you'll be tracking armies, you know, and I think there's a feeling that we all have, like, oh, such and such army is just overpowered, or that codex mm-hmm. is like really pushed, or, you know, some really aggressive rules or whatever. But we're going to see this all, you know, kind of play out, what players are doing what armies are doing what, and then how it all mingles together over a course of past just an anecdotal sample size of things.
Well, and not to kind of rain on when people actually see it, but one of the things that I suspected was, and always have, is that the factions are far more balanced than people make it out to be. The swing isn't as wild. Most factions hang around that 50% mark. I mean, there's some spikes and things like that, but the win rate is roughly within a 50% win loss ratio for most factions.
Well, we'll see. Yeah.
True. Well, I mean, see how it works.
Because we are tracked, like, I mean, this is one of the things that that I'm so excited about with coming over to the team. You know, Paul touched on the fact that it's 300 odd events a weekend. So it's just an absolute bucket load of games. But the key thing is that there's no gaps or very few gaps. So when I'm looking at, and I'll pick on Space Marines because it's the obvious one. Does anyone remember when Iron Hands kind of dropped, when that list just became bonkers?
When, like, October, November, not last year?
Yeah.
Was it, you reckon it was then? Okay. Because I'm looking at, so for the whole of last year, they averaged a 52% win rate, which doesn't even put them in the top five. But it was in early September that they went above their average and just kept going up. So the first three quarters of the year, they were sitting, they had peaks and troughs, but they were sitting somewhere between 40 and like 48%. So like they lost more than they won. And then around September, they just exploded, which what I'm really keen to look at when is putting in things like, all right, well, what date does a certain thing happen, like an FAQ or a codex drop or whatever, and then look how many weeks it takes for that to really have an impact. And then, you know, extrapolate that out and look at your players like your TJs and your Nanavardis and your Sieglers and going, all right, well, how quick are they to react, to the change in meta?
See, and this is some deep level stuff here, because you start to play. Yeah. Like, so I know that the curve says nobody's going to really crack the list or assemble the list. Like, there was a bit of a lag in Gene Stealer Cults when it came out because of the sheer volume of models that had to be there. And if you could be ahead of that by 2 weeks, you know, you might take home some trophies.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's really interesting to compare factions, but I find looking at some of those top players to see some of the trends, I find that exciting also, because you've got some players like, you know, Siegler, who play pretty much just one faction the whole year. And then you've got others like Nanavati that chop and change quite regularly. Really interesting to see the different, how someone can take a faction, adapt it as the meta changes versus being the changing of the meta.
Right.
Chasing that meta dragon.
don't hate.
I don't hate.
No, I'm just kidding with you.
Zero hate there. In 5th edition, I think I popped out so many armies. Oh.
So this show is probably going up on the 16th. When will people be able to start viewing and experiencing some of these, this amalgamation of great ideas?
Whew, that is a good question. As soon as possible. We actually don't have a street date. Well, and Josh, unless that has changed, I haven't.
No, I think what we are, you know, to obviously everyone here listening is probably 40K focused, which is good because that was our test case, because it's where I'm like most driven. But we're looking at rolling this out to multiple game systems, not just 40K. So we'll probably rebuild the stats for all the game systems that we're looking at rolling this out for, and then release it. But I think we're pretty happy with where it's currently sitting. So if it's not before the 16th, it'll be hopefully less than days. You know, we're talking in less than a week, I think this should be up.
That's great. And I will, if you guys have them to send, I'll put the screenshots in the post, the show notes. And, you know, where can people find y'all right now? What's the best place to go and track this and be up to date when these things do become available?
Best thing to do would be to join our Facebook page. Josh has mentioned a couple times we need to make a Facebook group. So we especially we want to have a Facebook group for getting feedback from our users and maybe doing a little more with that feedback too. But definitely join follow our Facebook page and look for announcements on that. And that's going to be where we'll announce formally that it's going to be up.
All right, guys. I will put whatever links I've got at the time of release up in there. So up in the notes, like I mentioned, so people can follow along. I think there's great things coming. I appreciate y'all taking the time today. And is it okay if we touch base in the future, especially as some of these things start to go live?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Always.
Let's do it, guys. We'll see y'all.
All right, man. Good talking with you.
Ciao.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I hope you enjoyed that segment between Best Coast Pairings and Down Under Pairings. Like, Adam, you've got to have some thoughts on that.
I am. All my thoughts are, this is incredible, and this is something I've wanted for a very long time, and hopefully this is going to be giving the community exactly what it needs for right now and what it needs to grow into all the incredible and amazing things it can be in the future. So I am stupendously stoked.
Yeah,
I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I think Best Coast Pairings was just an incredible lift to the community and the folks that needed that, a little bit of assistance to be empowered to get out there and start tournaments. And then I think that everything that you guys were doing with Down Under Pairings is just almost like a supercharge, like the nitro shot in a race car to
it's
even further.
Exactly right. I think the combining of resources, especially with the community that is as small as ours, but that has the potential to grow exponentially, I think combining resources just makes all the sense in the world. Inevitably, like, things of this nature sometimes burn out, sometimes people lose interest, or the community moves on to bigger and better things and things get neglected. But by combining resources and coming together and making something that can fit the needs as we grow, and on top of that, just be stupidly exciting and amazing. And some of the stuff, I've got a lot of access to a lot of the background stuff, and I'm seeing what's being developed, and it's really exciting. Look, guys. Hopefully everybody should get pumped about it.
What this game needs is those two nerds developing what they do, and then us two nerds talking about it.
Man, that's exactly right. That is today's a perfect world.
That's all. It's all coming together, man. It's going to be great.
Segway time. Harlequins.
Harlequins.
We did an episode. Me and you pretty much did a whole episode on Harlequins a couple of months ago, didn't we?
About
how they were the kind of the neglected stepchild, and somehow, you know, sometimes we feel like Yunari's taking a bit of their thunder, but they're this amazing painter's wet dream of an army that is fun and flexible, and the models are incredible, and they deserve a lot more love. And they finally got their Psychic Awakening release, or previewed at least. There have been some leaks out there, but we're not going to talk about that. The stuff that G-Dub has put out there is pretty exciting, man.
Yeah, so the Harlequins, it's a finesse army, so where you kind of have to have everything line up, or at least build your list. I think this is one of those, the Harlequins are one of those to where you do have to have a lot of effort in the list building phase of the game to make it work for you.
I don't think there may be more finesse armies. There may be more finesse-based armies out there, but I can't really think of one. This is a hard mode. Look, it used to be. It may not be a super hard mode playing
Shadow
a hard
Seer
mode army now.
Has his pinky up on his pistol. Like, I don't know what. How do you get more finesse than that?
It's right. Yeah, that is actually true. I'm looking at it right now. Wow, I've never noticed that before. It's fantastic.
So one of the interesting things about this is that the rules play into that aspect of the whole play thing. They are doing a performance of the battle. Like, anytime a Harlequin troop is there, like, the whole reason they're a troop is that they are performing the ritual, the play of the fall of the Eldari race, right? Like, so there's this, and now we've got this whole concept being introduced of the pivotal role, like the principal players in this play. And now it's going to allow you to customize your army even more. So you don't have to take the baseline stats of what it is in the rule book. You get to, like, I'm going to enhance this faction or this function one or the other based on whatever pivotal roles that I pick. And mm-hmm. and then in the true style, like what we have the ability to do is you can what we see with the stratagems is that you can pay a few command points, which is a precious commodity, a premium with the Harlequins because the troops and stuff are so expensive point wise that you can keep your baseline ability and then purchase an enhancement on that, or you can just sub out to this other thing, whatever you think is the best for you.
And so it seems like they've been given bonuses akin to tank aces or the Exarch powers for Craftlord Eldar, where you
That's a strong comparison,
But I suppose it's not so much the Exarch powers, because the Exarchs don't actually start with any powers. You're not replacing them with anything, but I suppose it could be more akin to the Tau specialist weapons or whatever. But in like Guard, you exchange your Warlord trait for a tank ace. And this one, you're exchanging, let's say you're a lieutenant, you would be exchanging your reroll one's aura to wound with another thing. You'd be removing that and adding something else instead. Now, and that creates a lot of interesting interactions because I don't feel like it as itself is a thing that could be overpowered, because you're already giving up something. There is an exchange happening here. So what I think it really represents more is just a bit of tactical nuance, saying, hey, in the meta at the moment, I'm going to be facing against these guys, or I can't seem to beat this enemy. These guys have the nuts on me, but if I exchange this power for this one, it tilts it back in my favor, maybe not significantly, but maybe I've got a sniff now. And I always like stuff like that.
When you are absolutely bested, like they have outlisted you in some capacity, you have the ability to possibly tilt it in your favor.
Yeah, and I suppose this is where stuff like this differs from, let's say, what Space Marines got, where they didn't have to trade off anything. They didn't have to give up anything. They just got like four more layers of rules added. Us lowly mortals don't get to get those things. And I play Guard and I play Admech and all those other things, and it doesn't look like we're going to be getting – no one else in the game has been given the swathe of new rules that Space Marines have gotten. But I really, really like what they've done here. And some of these are very relevant. Like there's no sticking your nose up at this stuff. Like these buffs are legit.
No, but still, it's subtle. Like you're still operating with around a toughness 3 frame. I mean, that's one of the most interesting things is you still have to play the game. This stuff is powerful. Like it's actually, in my opinion, really powerful. But you still have to play the game.
I'm just going to jump to one of the stratagems that they've shown us here. They just got the jump. Like virtuosos of the webway. 1 CP, use this stratagem at the end of your movement phase. Select one Harlequin's infantry unit from your army that is not within one, so not in combat or based with combat with any other models. Remove that from the battlefield and then just set it up 9 inches away. 1 CP to essentially do the jump to like. So there's a bunch of other stratagems that would work well when you incorporate this. Things like auto advancing 6 inches and the double move from Twilight Pathways. So in a lot of ways, Harlequins don't let you force everything into your opponent's face in one turn, generally not in turn one. Turn two, you can do it. You know, you pinch hit up 6 to 9 inches turn one, then turn two, you'll be all over them with, you know, your move advances and charges. But turn one, you can now do that. You can slingshot one, let's say one unit of bikes, goes just move its advances. You can double move a troop unit, and then you can move and auto advance 6 another unit, and then you can deep strike in another unit essentially 9 inches away on turn one. It's like a 1 CP drop pod. I like it a lot. I think, and adding this adds another level of dynamics to what should be, I think, the most dynamic army in the game.
Yeah, I think they're introducing a few concepts, even like hit and run. We have the hit and run concept brought back.
The flip belts.
We used to call that, it was basically hit and run used to be like the cheat and run. I mean, it was basically, it felt like, it was by the rules, but it felt like whatever your opponent did it, you felt like something's wrong here, like this should not be happening. And we have with the Harlequin jet bikes, you're able to get in there, attack, and when you can consolidate, you can effectively get out of range of your opponent to strike back at you. So you have some to be able to operate with impunity, and that's not something that a lot of armies even get the option to pretend to do.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be very exciting for Harlequins. You still have to operate, like, you're still toughness 3. Like, sometimes you're going to need the shelter of being in combat to not just be picked up by las guns and bolters and stuff. But just, I think you're going to be able to play the army and feel like it's playing like the stories say they should.
Next one they've shown us is Modus Entrance, which I think is one of my favorites that they've shown. I will let, you know, I'm sure listeners to this are no surprise that there have been some leaks for this. But even of all the ones I've seen there, this one is stupendously good. This is Murderous Entrance, 2 CP. Use a stratagem in the fight phase. The first time a Harlequin's unit from your army is selected to fight that phase, until the end of that phase, if that unit made a charge move this turn, add 1 to the damage characteristic of melee weapons and that unit is equipped with. So,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge, man. I think there's, I'm not sure if it's the Starglaives or the Star Bowlers that the bikes are equipped, the Skywaves are equipped with, but I think they're D3 damages or they're flat 2. I think on the glaives, they're strength 4, minus 1, and minus 2, flat 2, I believe. Someone in the chat will probably correct me on that. But they're going to damage 3 is a huge deal. Huge deal. Or going to D3 plus 1 damage is a huge deal.
Yeah,
on top of that,
there are so many times when you do get a model down to, you've almost bracketed somebody, or, you know, oh, they have a character model with 1 wound left. You know, like, it's... Yes.
It's massive. On top of that, so there's a lot of ways to make Harlequin troops really, really, really killy. So like 5 attacks each on 10 guys. So 50 attacks that are all going to be quality, whether you've got the kisses or the caresses or the embraces. They're all good at something different. But plussing a damage onto all those profiles on top of them being a very flexible weapon set, I think that could be the piece de resistance. I am a big fan of Harlequin troops with how flexible you can make them. I've never been a big fan of them because of how many CP and resources you have to put into them to make them worth their points. I feel like you're already paying a premium in points for what you get. You shouldn't have to be constantly paying CP to not make them just evaporate to some like 10 first rank, second rank glass guns.
I do think that the best way to build these are going to be a similar situation to where you take some element of craft worlds in here with you.
Seeing as they didn't get given any mono bonus, I feel like the only reason to not soup now is if your army got a mono bonus. And if you're not wearing power armor, sorry to guys, you don't have a mono bonus. But actually, holy crap, that is true because Sister's got a mono bonus.
Well,
diddly darn, Adam. That was a good one.
Fair enough. But I think that adding in some warlock powers and this kind of stuff,
yes.
I mean, it's going to be just really super strong. And if I can talk about the pivotal role, I mean, we talked about them earlier, but the troop master with the access to this thing called Darkness's Bite. Each time this model fights, after it is fought, you can select 1 enemy unit this model made an attack against. That unit suffers 2 mortal wounds. And so if you find yourself in a situation where you're charging 2 units, or a character model and another unit, you know, you can dedicate 1 attack to that. So for instance, you were talking about like something with a kiss with those multiple damage or whatever. It's like, oh, and by the way, BT dubs, take 2 mortal wounds.
for the privilege. Like, I'm envisioning a scenario here. Let's say you have a character and you smite that character down to 2 wounds left, and he's supporting another unit. You charge the other unit, you get within a 1 inch of this guy, and you put 1 attack into him. That model's dead, already dead.
Yeah, you don't care what the result of that is. The dice are meaningless. You just get to do 2 mortal wounds to him.
1 enemy this model made an attack against. You don't even need to hit with the attack. Just saying, I'm declaring an attack at that guy. He just takes 2 mortal wounds. Remove the model, please. He's gone. He's already kaput.
Boom, like, shakalaka, put him back in the box.
That's a real big deal against things like Transhuman, Storm Shields, or like even Feel No Pains. Like a lot of stacking Feel No Pains. Like, sorry, not stacking, but 5+ Feel No Pains and things of that ilk. Yeah, being able to guarantee
you're going to have to take... his aura ability with that to do that kind of thing. But you don't have to. Like you could spend the CP. You have to basically decide if you want to structure your army to whether or not you are replacing that, or you are enhancing his normal ability with that.
I'm a big fan of this one. You can replace it with, and so as with tank aces, these are flexible. You don't need it. You can just declare that you're doing this on your list, but then not pick what you're replacing it with until the start of the game. Is that that might not be correct?
We'll have to see that. I don't know if it has to be declared at the beginning. Like I don't want to go that far with my speculation about until we actually see the physical copy in our hands. But
I would say that would be my assumption because that's the way they've gone with the other ones. But yeah, we can't say that for sure. Definitely. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. But Agent of Bedlam is another one they've shown us. And while enemy units are within 6 of this model, subtract 1 from the attack's characteristic. So you can essentially just nullify someone's Shock Assault. This is your army that you think has Shock Assault doesn't have Shock Assault within 6 inches of this team.
Yeah, so if you get if you pop off, what is it, the one that lets you teleport? Like you have a Shadow Seer, a Death Jester, and a Solitaire.
Yeah. can't remember what it's called, like cast of players or something.
Yeah, something like that. But you can reduce the attacks, make somebody -4, -5 to hit. So basically, you're never hitting the solitaire that then absolutely mugs your unit or character model. There are things you can do to have some explosive turns, and that's exactly what the Harlequins want.
There's one here for the Death Shutter they've showed us. So that's the Harvester of Torment. Each time this model shoots, if the target unit contains 6 or more models, each successful hit scores 3 hits instead of 1. This is not cumulative with any other things that cause additional hits. So there's the Shrieker mode on the Shuriken, whatever it's called, that the Death Jester has. It's 3 shots, and I think it's like it's a Shuriken cannon. I assume it's like strength 5. So that means you could strength 6, and of course 6s would be -3 or whatever. But automatically, like this guy hits on 2s as well. So essentially, automatically you're getting 9 shots with this guy instead of 3. Seems legit.
That's pretty big. So the biggest detriments to the Death Jester is the 24-inch range, and then it's a maximum of 3 shots. And so you just...
Yeah.
They look cool. They're absolutely... Like, one of my greatest memories of 40K involves a Death Jester.
Regardless.
You have not been able to replicate that. I mean, I'm talking about going back to 1991, 92 with Death Jester kind of thing. Like, it just does... You haven't been able to replicate that. This gets you closer to that. So that's what they've missed. They've missed range enhancements and number of shots, yep. and this adjustment, this supplement to their rules addresses both of those things.
I just got to the bottom of this one, and they've shown us a Death Jester's a relic, essentially. A Death Jester's, it's called Kegarak's Lament.
Yep.
And one of the profiles is the Shuriken, range 36, so you're getting +12-inch range, assault 3. Strength 6, -3, 1 damage. So that can be 9 hits at that range. And then before selecting targets, this is the abilities, select one of the profiles above, of course, to make attack switch. Each time a model is slain by an attack made with the whale profile of this weapon, which is the first profile of this weapon.
Assault 1 becomes Assault 3 because of the extra shots.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The unit suffers D3 mortal wounds at the end, so you can kill 3 guys, do 3d3 mortal wounds, and the shots are already strength 6, -3, flat 3 damage. So that's legit. On top of that, they are -2 from their leadership as well. That's a complete package right there, as far as I can tell. And on top of that, there's another relic for them already called Curtainfall, which I believe is actually quite good also. I'll need to double check what that is, but you could have 2 Death Jesters with 2 amazing relic sniper rifles. The difference being, this one can't target characters. I think that's what Curtainfall must be able to do, because I can remember that makes the sniper Death Jester, and it makes him pretty terrifying, unless it's one of the special rules on his profile.
No, I think you're right. There is a way to make the sniper Death Jester a lot more deadly, like a lot more actually fearsome.
I will apologize if I've gotten a couple of the Harlequins rules wrong. They're not something... They're like... and I feel like this is... It's not exclusive to Harlequins, but this happens to Harlequins more than it should. And I've just told you that I'm a proponent of this. But a lot of people know a lot of misc facts about Harlequins. But when you talk, there's only like a handful of people who you can walk up to and be like, tell me all the Harlequin special rules, and they'll be able to reel them off. You know what I mean? I feel like it's not a quiet taste.
You know,
it's more like
they have a lot of fringe stuff, a lot of things that are like, you know what? That'd be cool if it just worked out exactly right. Yeah, and, like, and there are a few players out there that can really rattle them off, and those players are going to be exceptionally dangerous after this supplement goes into full effect. But I mean, heck, I hope to add my name to that list. I mean, this is what is needed to, I think, make the Harlequins an actual force, and it's pretty cool that it's happening.
I think this is what they needed to make Harlequins. You want to take a Harlequins primary, or at least like a 50-50 Harlequins army, if not more. Because before then, you'd be like, okay, I can take my selection of 3 good characters, and then maybe a unit of bikes. And that was pretty much the extent.
You wanted the fattest unit of bikes you could possibly get.
Yeah. And then you pump that bike full of with all your strats, which would be funded by you taking Cabal or Black Heart stuff or Kraftwerk Eldar stuff, and you'd fund and you'd buff the absolute bejesus out of that bike unit, and it'd be deadly and dangerous and flying around all over the place. But I think there is a legitimate case that you can make Harlequin troops a legit fearsome threat, both in combat and in shooting with things via things like the fusion pistols that I believe have gone down in points. But I'm just coming back to that analogy I had before about, like, I know for a fact I have a bunch of Eldari players in my meta, and if I walked up to them and asked them any rule about Craftworld Eldar or Dark Eldar, Drakkari, they'd be able to reel them off ad nauseum. But if I was to do the same thing about, like, some obscure stratagem for Harlequins, they wouldn't have a clue. And I apologize to the Harlequin players out there. Hopefully that's something I'll change in the future as well.
No, I know we talked about this, you know, but as far as like things that give minus one to hits, you know, you got to think that the Craftworld Eldar have been wrecking people with a two CP stratagem that makes one unit minus one to hit. You know, So if you get in anywhere, if you ever see a discount to that, that gives somebody minus one to hit, and they get to stack up with other things that give them minus one to hit, like, wake up and, like, understand that's powerful.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still one of the best defensive things you can have going for you in the game.
It's only not as good as it used to be against Marines who get...
Against Marines, exactly.
Rerolls, yeah. Right? But you're not always going to be playing Marines. Like, you already know what you're up against when you're playing Marines, but there are lots of other factions out there. But yeah, that's all I want to point out, that, like, the Harlequins, this may be what they need to elevate them to be where it's not just a companion force. I mean, I know I mentioned adding craft worlds into this, but I think the craft worlds will be the companion to the Harlequins. Like, you might,
I would love to see that.
You might just want to add, you know, a patrol detachment into this to get some warlock powers. Yeah.
What a world would that be where Craftworld Eldar is playing second fiddle to Harlequins? That'd be fantastic.
Yes, it's going to be interesting, man. Well, cool. Let's take another break. I'll come back in with John Damaris from 40K today, and then you and I will come back with a hobby segment.
Beautiful. See you then.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a community spotlight segment on FTM. My name is Paul. I'm joined this afternoon by John Damaris.
Hey, everyone. How's everybody doing today?
Hey, John, man. Thanks for joining me. People last week would have heard you on the first ever segment of 40K Today on Forge the Narrative.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Thank you. First, let me say thank you for letting us just sort of piggyback onto your amazing podcast and just give people a little exposure to what we're doing over here at 40K Today. That's great. And, you know, we're just along for the ride. So appreciate it.
I think it's very fun because the sheer breadth of ideas and concepts that you explore over the week of your daily show, you know, is really cool. And I think that the y'all's and your team, the entire team over there, it's a really great culture fit to FTN. And so I figured, you know, why not, you know, kind of get that exposure to those things that we don't often get to talk about, because you're out there, you're actually looking high and low to take a phrase from you that we discussed in the pre-show for interesting things out there. Would you mind telling me a little bit about how you assemble the team, what your idea is, and how you find the things that you do?
Okay, well, first off, I started with the mistaken notion that a 15-minute podcast would be a lot easier to do than a 2-hour podcast. Number one, that's wrong on every level that you can imagine. So I started thinking about it, and I was like, it'd be really cool to do like a short-form podcast that was a quick overview of kind of like what was going on in the world of 40K, and it's so vast. So we could just like sort of help boost the signal to noise ratio to help these great content producers out there to get a little bit of exposure. And like you said, we search high and low, right? So we're looking when Games Workshop gives out big news, of course we're going to talk about that. That would be like searching high, right? But also we might run into like, you know, a 40K super fan that has painted 250,000 points of models, which is actually coming up next week, so probably this past week actually for you guys. But he, you know, Kyle painted 250,000 points of models in 2.5 years. And I'm like, how did you do that? So just kind of talking through that process to just, you know, get interesting stories around and in 40K. You know, we talk about hobby. We've got a, you know, model of the day where we just find amazing models to highlight and showcase. We talk about competitive play. You know, we have guests on who talk everything, you know, from in-depth tactics to whatever. And again, the whole point is give you a little taste. If you like it, there's links in the show notes to explore further. And it's low commitment on your part to listen to us because it's just 15 minutes a day. Super easy.
You've concentrated a lot of what these people are doing into a couple of minute segment, but then you also provide people like, if you want to know more, it's like from Starship Troopers. Would you like to know more or do you want to know more? You know, it gives you the option of finding it yourself for the things that really, you know, if you want to go down the rabbit hole with some of these content producers.
Yeah, and then just to talk about the team really quick, you had asked about that, and I forgot to get to it because I got excited. full disclosure. But I have assembled the best team ever. So like I said, putting together a daily podcast that's 15 minutes is actually way harder than putting together a two-hour podcast because like a two-hour podcast, you turn on the mics and you kind of just talk. And sure, you have a plan. And
hey, wait a second. What are you trying to say?
you actually have your podcast has a really good plan. My previous podcast, just turn on the mics or whatever. And I'm like, so now I'm planning all of these interviews. And so, you know, we've got a content producer named Alex, who's just this whiz-bang 16-year-old kid who knows everything about 40K and is constantly looking at things. So he a lot of times is helping us find those diamonds in the rough. We recently had just Tanya join the show, and she does all of our social media and really helps us promote those content producers that come on our show, right? And help promote those stories. Seamus, our sound engineer, is the reason why we have good sound. Is he is a student for sound engineering, but he does a really good job making us sound good. And last, the show doesn't work at all without Steve Joel, who is the primary host. And full disclosure, when I first started the show, I was like talking to Steve about it because, you know, we'd become friends and I'm like, hey, I need your advice. And he's like constantly giving me tons and tons of advice. Well, you could do this and you could do this. And a lot of the format is sort of his baby. And so I'm like, you know what? You should be doing this with me because you have all the knowledge and the know-how. So if you notice, we have kind of a radio feel. Mm-hmm. And that's because Steve is a legitimate radio host in a very large market in New Zealand. And so he just knows what he's doing, right? So it's a great team. I feel very blessed to be a part of it. And it's super fun. So,
man, that's cool. Yeah, it sounds like you got people that have the know-how and also the commitment and the drive for the 40K stuff. And yeah, that's pretty neat, man. No, that's just fun to hear about. I know that. I mean, you mentioned you mentioned some of the what you get from people. You know, the super fan this and that and whatever. And you cover news, and you also cover people that are out there doing things like interesting battle reports, interesting styles of things. I mean, it's not just that. You get to know a little bit about under the hood talks of these people and why they do their things. Has there been some interesting things you didn't expect to know so far or find out so far?
So like one of the segments that we really like doing is women in Warhammer. And the reason why we do that is because, you know, I'm not saying anything people don't know, but our hobby is largely male dominated. And what a lot of the women are telling me is it's becoming more and more welcoming. And so we're trying to boost that noise a little bit, that signal, so that people, so that we sort of tip the scales a little bit in a little way that we can. But it's been really fun to listen to their stories about how they got into Warhammer, right? Because I'm genuinely curious because, you know, I know how, and I know this is a generalization, so please don't take me to task on this. But most of us had got into it because we were, you know, impressionable boys, and it's just cool stuff, man, right? Like, we're just like, oh, yeah, I want the Space Marine thing.
You got monsters, you got lasers, you know, yep.
Yeah, and what I found, it's really interesting, a lot of the women that I've got in, they're just as excited about that kind of thing, right? That's not what I'm saying at all. But they get into the hobby, and they're a little bit pushed away by the fact that it's very male-dominated. But the thing that, like, gets them over the hump is, like, a love for the lore. So, like, one of them we talked to, they started a whole series of podcasts and vidcasts doing book reviews, right? And they do, like, a genuine book club. I think it's every 2 weeks on YouTube where they just talk – and they just geek out about what's going on in the lore, right? And that got them over the hump. And then we talked to another one who played they were a journalist in video games, and they played Space Marine, right? And then one of them made the comment like, hey, StarCraft called. They'd like their IP back, which is hilarious when you think about it because Games Workshop actually predates StarCraft.
Yeah, so, that wouldn't exist if –
And so we had a good laugh because they were laughing about it too, right?
StarCraft is so old though that now, I mean, there's people that weren't even born that are gaming now when it first came out, and they don't know that, you know?
Right? Yeah, they have no idea that there was this little company that made toy soldiers for people, and that was sort of the basis of StarCraft, or at least part of it, right? So.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. With you mentioned geeking out and being able to talk, like, that is the best. That's one of the hardest things to do. And if people listen to us on last week's episode, we did this whole thing on Star Wars. That was kind of neat. You didn't know this, but when your lead in on the show that we inserted also referenced May the 4th, and that's we probably spent 30 minutes talking about Star Wars. And yeah, we can take the deep dives into nerddom. That's part of what my show does every now and then.
Yeah, it's a great part of the show, right? Because honestly, none of us nerds are like, we do one thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we all have a wide breadth, right? So we have many mistresses, whether it be D&D or Star Wars or Star Trek or both. I'm both, by the way. Nobody needs to judge. that kind
I
of thing.
I just judged.
Did you?
I'm kidding. No, you're fine. You're fine.
Actually, I just recently watched the Galaxy Quest documentary. I can't remember if it was on Netflix or on Prime. But man, I geeked out over that because I forgot how good that movie was. Galaxy Quest, so good. The best Star Trek movie, I think.
It really is. I mean, that movie... I mean, you go into it and you think, like, you know, you one thing about it, but then you come away from it like, I just watched a real movie.
Right? With, like, real feelings and talking about big ideas as you can with science fiction. Like, it's everything Star Trek wants to be. And a lot of times Star Trek is, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, it's just a fantastic movie. And it's so much fun. Like, it's just really fun.
Yeah, my wife loves that movie. We watch it probably, you know, every opportunity. If she sees it on, if she's scrolling through the channels and it's on, she'll stop and watch it, which means, you know, I watch it every now and then too. So, but not that I wouldn't. I'm just saying I've seen it a bunch.
Yeah. Good man. Good man. Princess Bride is like that for me. So.
Yeah, that's another go. We could just nerd out. And so, you know, this is going to be a short segment. We can turn this into something else. But that's going to be a great excuse to have you back on, man. And also, you know, people, I think it's cool to know what you guys are about if they haven't already checked out the 40K Today show, that this stuff makes it in there. You're not going to get quite, you know, all the information on this, but you're going to get exposed to lots of things that you then, if it's something you want to know more about, you guys make it really accessible to people. You're pretty much kind of curators of nerd content. And it's not just from that week. It's things that people may be out there doing that people haven't discovered yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And then honestly, we're very approachable. So if you guys are like, find something that you think is really cool, send it our way. We'd love to talk to people. Most of our show is interviews with the actual people doing the stuff, doing the thing, as you might say. So yeah, let us know. Like, one of the really cool ones I'll just mention really quick. There's a guy out there that is casting for audio plays in the 40K universe.
Oh, so is he actually the Cold Open Stories?
Yeah, that's it.
It's good stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so things like that. So yeah, we found that. He just reached out and said, hey, I don't know if you're interested. They're like, heck yes, we're interested. This is really cool, right? Really unique. So things like that are great.
Dude, man. Well, where can people find you? I mean, I know they'll be able to, we're going to have some of the stuff on here. We might even do some stuff where we publish out y'all's combined series of segments on our YouTube channel, so people check back to there if you don't go there yet to hear the show. But where else can people find you? How can they communicate with you and maybe tell you what they're about?
It's really easy. 40K Today. You can find us on Facebook. Just search 40K Today. If you want to talk to us, if you want to find us to subscribe to our podcast, it's just 40ktoday.com. There's a subscribe link, and whatever podcast aggregator you're using, we probably have a link there for you. Awesome. Easy peasy.
Yeah, well, man, I'm a fan. I think you guys are doing great stuff. You got great folks. I've had the joy of interacting with several of y'all on different occasions, and you know, really, really like it, endorse it. Please check them out if you haven't already.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for having this chat. I really enjoyed it.
Man, have a good night.
You too.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging in here with us. You know, John, talking about 40K Today, we are going to introduce a couple of 40K Today segments over the course of, you know, a couple shows a month or whatever. And I hope you guys appreciate it. Man, I really believe in what they're doing. I think they're bringing an highlight of a lot of good things that's going on out there. And, you know, I think it's pretty cool.
Agreed. And John is... Well, he's just hit the scene in a big way, such a trailblazer of the community now. And I think he's just doing great works and his heart's in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely awesome. So let's talk about the hobby segment. So I've seen this in other things, but I left the heads off of my Mega Knobs and glued them with super glue two bits of the sprue that I cut off.
Yeah, so you just got cut long lengths of the sprue, an inch or two. So something you got something to hold on to when you paint it.
Yes, and so they could actually brandish them in their power claws to look even more intimidating as they're holding their own heads.
Their whole own heads. Only orcs would be able to get away with that because they believe they're still alive. So therefore they are.
But, you know, with the Magnanimous, I find that sub-assembly of things is sometimes, like, I get about, I don't know, maybe a third of the way into my painting of things that I've done as sub-assembly, and I'm like, this is too fiddly, and I'm dropping bits, and I hate life.
I had to go out and purposely buy I think it's a tackle box with all these little compartments in it. I just went to a DIY store, and there's just a fold-up plastic container with tons of little bits and compartments in it. And then, only then, could I start to comprehend building sub-assemblies. Because I tried it before and was just like, why do I have 13 torsos and 11 heads. Oh, Jesus. I'm going to have to look in the vacuum cleaner to see if
that's it. No, I've literally lost a Gretchen. It's around here somewhere. I mean, I've tried to find him. He's gone. But that's a different story. But with anything building with sub-assembly, I often find that, yeah, it's great in theory, but yet my actual application of it ends up, I don't know that it saves me any time. And that could just be me. Like, you all have to find whatever you need to make the result come out like you want. That's fine. And I think sub-assemblies is cool. And the Meganoms are almost like a classic example of that. Like we mentioned earlier with the slots and the nubs or whatever, that you don't have to necessarily choose whether or not you equip them one way or the other. Like the only choice you have to make is whether or not you equip them with combi rockets or combi flamers. That's really it, you know.
Yeah.
Everything else is pretty optional based on the kit itself, but the head is, you know, they've got these really powerful jaw armors that could keep you from getting to some of the details on the face. And we, as we know, you know, the face is one of the primary, like, focal points of the miniature. And so I thought that I put all these things together with plastic glue. I did not glue on the arms or I didn't glue on the hands where the weapons are, because you don't have to. But and I left the heads off specifically and super glued them to pieces of sprue. You could easily do toothpicks with whatever. I find that the poster tack, like we often talk about blue tack, whether it's blue or white tack, when I'm getting in there with the dry brush, the tack doesn't hold it, and so it gets fiddly and annoying to stand there. So yeah. I thought if I glue it with super glue, I could bend them off, clip them off of the base, snap them off of whatever I glued them to, which is in this case a piece of sprue, and then glue them on easily with plastic glue to the neck once I've painted the face.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure if you do similar to me, but I paint my models and my bases separately. Like I paint my model and then I'll break him off. Like I have a bunch of, I call them scum bases.
Yeah.
They've had 20 different models painted on each base, and the models are glued on there with like a tiny bit of super glue. And so I can just snap them off when they're finished. Painted.
That's it. That's exactly right.
And so it's the same premise essentially. It's just, this is easier to paint and makes more sense to paint it separately, especially with things like faces and heads, eye lenses on a lot of robotic models, things like some of the bigger Space Marine models, and a lot of Eldar with their, so Eldar have got a lot of weird heads, like things like the Wraith Blades and Wraith Lords, Wraith Knights. Those things can be a lot easier to paint off the model, especially if you're painting the whole thing at once and you're gonna have wet paint in other places and you got this fiddly grid pattern you want to do on their skull face weirdo lens thingo. That lets their soul
lens thingo
see from the outside.
Technical term.
Lens thingo. Yeah, absolutely right. We only speak in technical terms here.
Yep.
Highbrow stuff. But yeah, a lot of those can be like you can save yourself a lot of headaches by putting a little bit more effort in the assembly process. And usually I'm just kicking the crap, you know, talking to mates or watching stuff when I'm assembling anyway. And a lot of the time, as soon as you've assembled the first one or two or something, the rest of it is just like muscle memory, especially for long-term hobbyists, which I'm sure many of the people listening are. Like, I don't need to tell you that I could probably build a rhino blindfolded. It would take me a bit longer, but I could still probably do it.
But not much longer.
Fraction longer. Yeah. And yeah, so building subassemblies, you're only adding like one or two processes into like a 30 process thing. It's pretty minuscule when you think about it, especially when you start prepping it ahead of time. And I know subassemblies are a lot more relevant with airbrushing. I don't know how much airbrushing you do, Paul, but subassemblies are just the way to go, especially when you've got subcomponents and so many different colors in your scheme and whatnot. Like keeping a cloak off, a cape off let's say, a Adeptus Custodes watch captain with his bright crimson cloak. If you're airbrushing, there is no reason to have that cloak on the dude. It's got two contact points, painting, stick it on. Like, yeah, it makes so much more sense.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's all about time. I think that's the only time you should ever consider whether or not the subassembly is right for you is that does it actually save you time or does it give you a better result? And I mean, and that's really is how much time did it take me to spend on this model? Do I get a better result of that? And I think that's it ultimately boils down to a exchange of time with whether or not you do subassemblies. And for me, I thought that, man, I'm never going to get the face that I want on this model, or I would spend a lot of time touching up the jaw armor. Because I'm getting in there and trying to get green on the face or fangs, whatever.
Yeah, exactly right.
Let me just leave the heads off. I feel like I've got a pretty good system here where I can super glue the head to the sprue and then snap it off and then plastic glue it back onto the model. I think that's it. You basically just got to figure out what your time to effort ratio is and how assemblies are right for you.
Yeah, and what level you're painting to. I think you said that as well. Yeah, is it the result that you want? It's fine adding like 5 hours to your paint and your build if it's going to produce and you're going to be so much more happy with the end result. Because I think that is like I enjoy painting, but I think I get the most satisfaction out of in the moments after let's say the 5 minutes after I put the last paint stroke on it. That is the most satisfying part of when I paint.
And that's it. Yeah, you look at it like this is from me looking at this model, I'm pleased.
Yes. Yeah. Those 5 minutes of like, that's a good job.
Yeah.
Look at that. Look at that little bit that no one else is going to notice except me. That's fantastic.
That's what people all the time like, oh man, I put this cloak on or I didn't, like you mentioned, this cape or whatever. Like if you can't see it, who cares if it's painted?
Yeah, that's a little true. I
gave a lot of people a heart attack out there.
I still paint the bottom of all my tanks. I've got 13 Lehman Russes and the butts are all painted. But I mean, why? It's because I couldn't know it wasn't painted,
Yeah, no.
If someone else.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that's a horses for courses thing.
No, I'm with you. You never know when, it's also like angles of the model. Like if you turn the model one way, you turn it the other way, do you show your sins?
Well, and that just comes back to what you want out of the game. If you're just painting because you like to play, do whatever makes you happy. If you're trying to get better as a painter, find your level of time to reward. Like how much time do you put in before it becomes nauseous and you don't enjoy it anymore?
Yep.
And then just pair it back until it's back to the right level for you and what your result will be.
When I talk to my friends who are amazing painters and I show them, sometimes I show them figures like, oh man, have you seen this? This is freaking amazing. And some of them, now look, you can tell some of them are just kind of being haters. But some of them I know that are capable of whatever that is, and they're like, it's just time. Like, that guy spent his whole year painting that model, right? Like, in the scope of the time that someone has painted that one model, I've painted 100 armies. And I'm hyperbolizing, right? But, I mean, like, that's it. But you got to make that call for yourself. It's like, do I do this one time, or do I do this 1,000 times and get my army?
Yeah.
It's
not realistic. You see some of these crystal brush and golden demon entries and you're like, wow, I wish I could paint like that. And I'm like, dude, I wish I could paint like that and also could have a life, because you can't really do both. Like those amazing, incredible, jaw-dropping dioramas have literally hundreds and hundreds of hours.
Look, I'm not judging. I think it's all real valid, right? But I mean, but those are how you have to kind of judge yourself. I was like, what do you want?
I respect the passion, though. I respect the passion. I respect the dedication to the art. And I just love looking at that stuff.
Oh, sometimes you just got to get it out of your system, man. You've got to get it out. You've got this thing like inside you. Like I have to paint a Blood Angel Stern Guard unit. Like I just have to do it. And I've done it.
Exactly.
But I've been there. Like I cannot exist. I cannot take one more step forward until I get this Blood Angel Stern Guard unit.
I have had that before. I had it with my first Baneblade.
Oh, nice.
I was just like, I had to have a Bane Blade. I had to have one. It's just like my life was not complete until I had a fully painted, built Bane Blade. Yeah. But here's an analogy for you. So I'm not sure how good a cook you are, but I love to cook. I'm quite a decent cook as well. I love to eat too. But I love going to restaurants where I can order food and I have no idea how they made it. And that's how I like my hobby too. I like to look at magazines and pictures and Instagrams and just be like, I've got no idea how you did that, dude, and I love it.
Yep. Yep. Mm. I can see it's like special effects in movies. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep.
I do not need to know how the sausage is made. I just need to enjoy the sausage.
Exactly right. I found out, is it completely off topic? You know Jurassic Park, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I read an article, and I didn't know this. I assumed the T-Rex in Jurassic Park was just legit insane 1994 or whatever. Special effects, and that they had some freak shows that were 10 years ahead of their time. They built a T-Rex. They built a full-sized mechanical T-Rex in that movie. And all this time I've been like, wow, those special effects really hold up, don't they? Wow, that was pretty good for it. Well, they were early 90s, and that's crazy. They built a T-Rex. So there you go, still learning.
That's awesome, man. To bring us slightly back on topic is that I know that one of the focal points is going to be the faces, and so like, yeah. how can I still like largely dry brush or contrast paint this model? I'm going to paint them yellow and red. Like I am a filthy meta chaser, and I'm going to split the needle on whether or not these are bad moons or bad moons evil suns.
Yeah,
like, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
It's a good scheme though. It looks good on him.
Yes, I don't even like painting red. I know I play Blood Angels, and I'm not trying to. I get it. But I do.
All right, somebody, get that on record and send me that soundbite, because I'm just gonna like next time I'm streaming with you and you say something I don't agree with, I'm like, I'm be like, Dark Angels player, I don't like painting red. I don't like painting red. I don't like painting red.
But, yeah. But I love the red and yellow together. I think that's a cool combination. And I think I can kind of split that difference between red and yellow and get some really cool looking mega knobs. But I know that even if I screw that up, I'm going to have some amazing bases and faces, you know? And so that's why I've got the heads off on their own, glued on their own bit of sprue. So I can, like, even if you do not like what I've done with the rest of the model, you will be impressed by this face because I can get all the details on it.
Yes, agreed. Man, what a revolution it was when you realized you could put bone on orc skin.
Yes.
And it just elevates it. Well, that was a revelation to my brain.
Yes, and it works. I'm telling you.
It freaking works. So
Wog flesh, Coleo green shade, a couple of dry brushes, and you've got some amazing flesh. That's it. And then top off with the bone.
A little bit. Is it Ushabti or Karak stone if you're going Citadel?
I do the Ushabti bone, but yet it's Tyrant skull if you're if you're going
with the dry.
Yeah, I mean, although it's like there's like another bone or whatever, but yeah, Tyrant skull is the dry. But I
think
Ushabti bone.
I think Screaming Skull's the lightest bone they've got. Maybe I'm talking out. Never mind. Don't know for sure. I shouldn't say.
Well, but you're not. I don't see. We're talking about like our ham-handed eyes. Whatever, are probably not going to notice the difference between the three different bone colors that we just described. But
yeah,
like you're not going to go wrong with that bone color on top of a green.
I agree.
Whatever bone color you choose. Well, Adam, man, thanks for hanging out with me, and I know that you're as excited as I am, probably even more excited about the Best Coast and Down Under pairing.
I couldn't be more excited. That stuff is going to keep me full of beans for hopefully a couple of years to come with all the new and amazing things we can bring.
All right. Well, please like, share, and subscribe. Continue to leave us those 5-star reviews. Next week, I will read the 5-star reviews. I've got some other things to talk about next week as far as like stuff. Please check out the show notes. There's some shops I want to direct you to, some other things. Hang out. You're going to enjoy it. Guys, Adam, thank you.
Anytime, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Have a good one.
Handle the truth.